Welcome to the Playing With Purpose podcast for the New York Video Game Critics Circle. I'm your host, Ryan O'Callaghan, and with me today is NYVGCC intern and fellow Red Dragon, Jade Ntien. Jade, welcome. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. So last time we talked, you were doing dress rehearsals for your play. How'd that go?
It was great. Sweet Charity was amazing. I played Daddy Rubek. And it was great. Everyone kept saying, like, stopping me after the show, "Hey, your number was one of my favorites." I'm like, rhythm of life is such a big number. Everyone is amazing. And it's easily one of my favorite musicals.
That's fantastic. Awesome. So just a little bit of housekeeping before we jump into the show. Be sure to follow NYVGCC on Twitter and Instagram for any and all updates. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening. And if you want to support the work that we are doing, you can make a donation at nygamecritics.com/donate, but we will have more on that later. But right now with us today is the voice of Clive Rossfield in Final Fantasy 16 and the upcoming DLC Rising Tide, available April 18th on PlayStation 5. Ben, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Yeah, I'm great. I've just had a nap.
Nice.
If just giving people really kind of the present, how's Ben right now? He had a nap. I got up very early this morning, did some work. And I'm kind of like a serial napper, as in like, I don't need long. I need like 10, 15 minutes, but ready to go.
That's impressive. I can't, like, I'm the kind of person that I will like lay in bed for like half an hour, just like running through everything in my brain. The thought of a 10-minute nap is like impossible.
I perfected it at drama school. I really did, where like you just didn't have long and we'd have these incredibly long days, sometimes like 12, maybe longer than 12 hours. It was kind of bad. But we'd have these really long days and you have to keep going. So I needed to find energy from places. And so I would just kind of go to these corners of the school somewhere and just like sleep for 10 to 15 minutes to recharge. And I've kind of taken that in with me into like the rehearsal rooms and in life. And yeah, my friends all say that I can just kind of sleep anywhere, which is good.
All right, Jade, you want to jump in with some of your questions?
Sure, of course. Ben, so nice to have you with us. I've heard quite a lot about you.
Okay.
A lot about your acting credits as well, not just voice acting, but stage performance. And I was like, wow. That's like such a resume. So I wanted to first ask about your history in theater. Mm. I know you went to university for history at first, but then you took, you did graduate school at Lambda.
Yeah.
What was that about? What was that like?
I wanted to be a stage actor. That was it. You know, when you grow up as a kid, the outlet that you have for creativity in small towns where I grow up is youth theater. And that's where I cut my teeth. I mean, I was doing everything. I was a member of like four different youth theaters at one point. And I would, every single night would be a different rehearsal for a different play or a different musical. And I always wanted to go to drama school. But I was also very academic at school, and the school that I was a part of basically just there was no avenue to go into the performing arts. You know, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a doctor or whatever. So I went to university, and then I thought, you know what, when I'm done with university, I'll just go straight to drama school, which is what I did. And I've never regretted it at all. I mean, I've got no use for my degree. But I would also say that university for me was such a formative time when it came to performance, because that is where I did my degree, but really I did theater. It was extracurricular theater. It was every single second of the day squeezing in rehearsals in between studies. It was like doing the most irresponsible hours just to get these plays done, because sometimes we were juggling three or four plays at the same time. And these friends, kind of, we all migrated from university at Durham down to London, and so many of them are still in the arts now. And I always thought, oh, after drama school, I'm going to go to the RSC and I'm going to go to the National Theatre and do that. But it didn't transpire like that. I went off and did TV and film. But theatre is my love. That's where I started. It's where I learned the craft of acting. And anyone who says, you know, how do I get into whatever it is that you do? I would say start there, because all the skills you learn are there, even if you modulate them to different degrees. Theater is amazing.
Were there like performances that inspired you to want to get into acting, like that stood out when you were younger?
I was having a conversation with a director today about this exact thing. There aren't these kind of monument. It's not like I went to the, you know, the National Theatre and saw Ralph Fiennes in a thing that changed my life. It was small touring companies that would come round to my like local theatres. And I was really, really into physical theatre. I was into the magic of bodies as objects. The idea of like three people on a stage can be a cast of 25. You know, that was the magic. And so seeing the versatility and the strength and the muscularity that a lot of these performers would possess just blew me away. I think it was, it's really annoying me now that I can't remember the name of this play. And it was like three people. I think they'd done a show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And it was just so incredible that they were playing this kind of like old Victorian comedy. There was a play that maybe went to New York. I don't know, called The 39 Steps. And it was this amazing three or four person play, and all the characters would be played by multiple people. Those are the things that made me think, wow, this is truly like an inspiring art form. And it was stuff like that early on that I really, really wanted to get into. And I never did because you get to drama school and suddenly it's like, all the objects are here. Don't use your body. But yeah, that's how that's what inspired me as a performer. I think someone asked me before, like, who is your inspiration, and probably Jim Carrey, like the elasticity of his performances, as crazy as they were, showed me kind of the extremes of what performance can be. It's like ultimate clowning. I think a lot of me as a person is inspired by those great clowns that have the ability to be very intense and possess all the sadness and stuff in a performance, but also, you know, be crazy.
Yeah, like you talking about like the just like the three person theater and like people being like different things. So I have a background in teaching. We did it for like 7 years and we would put on shows, but it was like 12 girls who wanted to do it. And they're like, all right, well, you're all playing like four different parts. So it's just like the running around backstage. You've got a bow and arrow now. You're switching out in this. And like, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. And like these kids are just running around, just having the time of their life, figuring it all out.
I think it is. It's the most amazing skill. It's magic when you're younger, because I think we're so constrained by the things that we know and we can see in front of us. And I think theater has the ability. We all totally understand when we go into the theater, we are suspending our disbelief. So we're so much more available to the magic that's in front of us. Whereas when we watch a TV show, it'd be like, well, that glass of water is not full. You know, we are sold that this is real life. Whereas in the theater, we are going, this isn't real life. This is something more than that. And we allow so much more. And I think it allows us to be much more emotionally affected by it. It means sometimes you see some absolute crap, but also if without failure, you know, you're not going to have those huge roaring successes.
So like you were just talking about like how the TV kind of differs from television and film. And then also like games is just a whole other animal. Like, what has that transition been like of moving from, you know, doing something like, you know, Johnstown and then going into, what was it, like 4 years doing like voiceover for?
Yeah, for five. Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah.
I love video games. I think they're the coolest thing ever. And I've been playing them for as long as I've been playing, dress up and, you know, essentially putting on silly accents and putting on wigs and crazy shoes and, so there's this great synergy between video games and performance for me. The difference is that you are exposed in a completely different way. It's all part of performance. You have to build a performance. You have to build it in a different way. And whether you're doing it on TV or stage or video games or whatever, voiceover, they all require the same thing, but they just require it in a different way. And you just have to figure out how that works for you. Everyone's process is going to be completely different. So how I break down my character and how I get into character is completely different from whatever other practitioner is doing pretty much the same job. But it was very exposing to begin with, because I've learned so much about my voice and my ability to express emotion with the voice, or in some cases not. And there are days where I will go into a session and I will feel brilliant. I'll feel like I am heroically excellent. Wow, aren't people lucky to be hear in my voice. And there are times where I go, I might be the worst actor of all time. I can't believe I've let everyone down. And that happens in rehearsals as well. But the difference with the video game is it's immortal, it's forever. That's now going to be there forever. So the pressure I place on myself is quite large. But yeah, I really think if you want to be a voice actor, if you want to be an actor in video games, theater is where you start, because you learn about your body, you learn about your connection of your body to your voice, and you learn how to protect your voice. A stage, classical stage training in whatever that may be, wherever you study it, practically understanding the limits of your body, the limits of your voice, and exploring it in a way that allows you to fail and discover what's good and what isn't is the best way. I think some people feel like I've got a microphone and I can have a go. That's also fine. You can do that. But to build a performance and build a character and to be able to sustain that over an extended period of time in the same way that you want to extend it to 8 shows a week on Broadway, it's that. The intensity is there, you know, and you, because you can't just shout. You know, people really, for some reason, really love it when actors shout, right? They go, oh God, I can feel the emotion in the voice. You do that a lot. You do that a lot. And you sometimes have to do that for hours. That is not possible if you just blow your load in the first go. You know, some of these scenes, I've been doing these scenes for 8 hours straight, 4 hours straight. Like, that's crazy on your voice. You will simply not have a voice the next day. And the best trained actors are still going to lose their voice. So you have to figure out ways of advocating for yourself, understanding what the limits of your voice are, and also just not going mad. You know, you're not doing it for real. You have to make it look like you're doing it for real. It's all in the artifice. I think some people get that confused. They're like, oh, it's more, you know, you really broke down. And it's like, yeah, I did, but I didn't. You know, it wasn't me. It was the character. But I think maybe we want to feel those human emotions. We don't want to feel duped, right? We want to feel that person was genuinely sad. And like, well, I was sad because I was crying, but I wasn't sad. It was the character that was sad. I was recreating the emotions and presenting them to you as a fiction that you believe. You know, to each their own, obviously. Some people love really good method, but.
If I could add on to that, definitely. I used to be a musical theater major. I dropped it. I'm now a minor. I major in communications now. Still the same. I already got my credits in. But there was this guy during Sweet Charity, this freshman, super gifted, loves him to death. He shot his voice out trying to do like the high parts for Cry at Weddings as a tenor. And he shot his voice. And the entire rehearsal process, he has like this breathing, I don't know, it's not like an asthma pump, but I didn't ask him exactly what it was. I used to joke that he was vaping on set. Mm-hmm. But it helped with his voice and everything, because he didn't like practice, you know, the high notes beforehand. And he was like, I'm just going to do this right here, right now. Honey, anyway, he's doing so much better now. The show went smoothly. Mm-hmm. And for me, yes, like, I've never had vocal training in my life before coming to college. So when I met my vocal teacher, Sherry, she helped me build my voice. So I never considered myself a soprano. I've never wanted to do high notes. I never wanted to do any of that. She helped me train my voice to a point where I was like, I felt more comfortable getting up there. Whenever we do like lip trills, she's like, you're now at a high E. I'm like, a high E? Is that good? That's Mariah Carey whistle notes. You're doing great. I'm like, yay. But yeah, like, if you want to better yourself, figure out who you want to be as a performer, theatrical arts is where to go. Like, everyone wants to be a screen actor, film, but stage theater, and I'm pretty sure the UK does this best, but stage theater is like so rewarding because it helps you build yourself, like your voice, your dance moves, your acting voice, like everything. It's just wonderful. And I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, it's connection. It's all about connection. Like, if I'm straining here, there, I'm automatically tightening the muscles in my throat. So, you know, it's the same as going to the gym. It's exactly the same as going to the gym. It is a muscle that you have to learn. And if you don't do it, then you will just be, you'll pull a muscle and then you'll be done. And it happens. It happens. It even happens to people who are really well prepared. You know, you can be the fittest person in the world and you're still going to pull something or you're going to make a mistake, that's fine. But you're also, if you're a professional, you're going to be doing it a lot. So you have to create circumstances where you're going to minimize the opportunities for you to break or burst those muscles. When I first started Final Fantasy, I was so nervous that I was trying to impress everyone. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do one more, which was a huge mistake because for the first 2 months I was on the back foot. I hadn't lost my voice, but my voice wasn't at full strength. And I learned a lot through that. And if I can, and I'm sure I could tell, you know, a first time voice actor on a job, don't show off. They'll still do it because maybe sometimes you need to put the hand on the hob and realize that it's hot. You know, you've got to treat the child and be like, yeah, there it is. That you'll never do that again. You never put your hand in a sharp thing or whatever, because sometimes as humans, we need to figure out what the limits of what we can and can't do. And I can warn you, but you do not know. And I think maybe as actors, performers, creatives, there's that little bit of arrogance that it won't happen to me. I'm better than that. You know, when we first started drama school, their principal of the school came down and there's like 25 of us in the year. So we're all really arrogant, like thousands of people applied, only 25 of you got in. Cool. And then they give you the stats, which is like in 5 years, only 5 of you will still be working. And in 7 years, only 3 of you will be working and making a living. And you're given those odds and you're like, won't happen to me. And it does, you know, it happens to the people who it doesn't work out for, because that's the nature of the industry. But we kind of think, no, I'll be cool. I'll be fine. And it's that arrogance that is both helpful and a hindrance to us. And as long as we can learn from those mistakes, you can continue on and be more and more successful at what you do. So I would always say to people, go and make the mistakes if you want, but you know, you might completely screw yourself over.
Yeah. Like what keeps you from being that statistic of like being that person who just, you know, doesn't make it, right? Like how do you feel you keep yourself going in that industry when there is that looming thought of like, is this the last project? Or
luck, talent, and persistence are the three things in whatever size you want those to exist. Some people are just incredibly lucky and are fine. They can be good actors, but they are just so lucky and they just hit at that one moment. Others are persistent, which is they don't make it for a long, long time, but they're there, and they stay there. And then suddenly it hits and their career just blows up. And then some are just talented. Some are just the mercurial, brilliant people who you just cannot ignore. And I'm sure there are more versions of it, but I think those are the three pillars that you can find in it, you know. And I think I'm a kind of a combination of some of them. My career has been affected by all of those. You know, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't good enough to be here. But I've been incredibly lucky, Final Fantasy being one of them. I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't turn up to one audition that one day. So I was lucky to be there, but I was persistent because I stuck with it. And for me, it was the combination of all of those moments, right place, right time. And I've also been, over the past year, I've been kind of dogged, really. Many other of my colleagues have commented about how present I have been. And that's because I want to be, because I love it. I really, really love being here. I love existing with colleagues and coworkers and being in an industry that I really appreciate the craft of. And that takes a lot of work, takes a lot of time. And it takes a lot of myself as well. You know, I get tired, I get sad. I'm not always like shiny and pretty and cool and not that many of these things now. Wow, that was arrogant. It's a lot of hard work if you want to be here. And I feel very, very fortunate to be one of the few who've stuck around to experience the cool stuff that this industry has to offer.
Well, yeah, like you seem like a very unique case when it comes to, you know, promoting yourself in both a game. Like it feels a lot in a sense like the way people would do it for film and television, right? Going around like I see you popping up on podcasts and I'm like, I didn't know anyone else listens to this podcast. And like, oh, cool. Ben Starr is on it. And I was showing my fiance, like I was doing the cover art for the podcast. And I was like, oh, this is the guy I'm interviewing. He's like, oh, I saw him do like a Mario bit. And I was like, yep, that's him. Like,
that's me.
Like you're doing a really great job of just like getting yourself there and promoting. Like it feels like, you know, going around and doing the chat shows like for a TV mm-hmm. show or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't see other people do it really. Yep. And I feel like they can. I modeled it a lot on when I first was able to in communication with Square Enix, I said I really want to be a face on this game. I love this game. I can talk about this game. I can talk about this character. And I was inspired a lot by a lot of kind of the lead creatives on AAA video games. So looking at kind of what Corey Barlog did for God of War. I'm not saying anything remotely, you know, but when Corey Barlog was promoting God of War, he was everywhere. He was on every single show talking about it because people want to hear about that game. And I said, well, when I'm over in the States, I'd love to just go on the shows that I like to go on because I listen to all of them. Because that's where I consume my content. And so I just said, I would love to go on this. And I reached out to as many people as possible. And I said, I'm a genuine fan of your work. I'm a genuine fan of your show. I mean, I listen to Kind of Funny every single day. I listen to Friends Per Second. I listen to Min-Max. I listen to Easy Allies. Like these are people who are so much part of my, the identity of what's in my ears. I know them. And so it was a really, really cool situation to go up to these people and say, I really like your work. I really like what you do. I'd love to talk to you sometime. And not in a self-promotional way. And it was, but also just kind of a selfish way of get to meet your heroes, but in a professional capacity. I was talking to these people as a fan as much as I was wanting to promote a video game. And what's been so wonderful is many of them are now friends. Many of them are now not just colleagues. They're people who I have on WhatsApp and we message and we check in and we talk all the time. One of the coolest things I got to do, it's a really specific thing, was this Christmas I got to be on something called the Christmas Maze. And PlayStation Access is something that I've been listening to for years. And I love them. I think they're amazing. And I love the Christmas Maze that they do, which is a take on the Crystal Maze, which is a very British TV show. And one of the cool things was Rob Pearson asking me to be a kind of a joke presenter on the Christmas Maze, which was for me a career highlight. Many people know me as Clive Rossfield, this very kind of like gruff, whatever, you know, sexy baby girl style character, swings a sword. But I got to be the campest, meanest, leopard print wearing asshole. And it was wonderful.
It really, I watched that. My takeaway instantly was like, who do we need to call to get Ben Starr on Taskmaster?
Yeah. Because
that's like, that is the perfect thing based on what I saw from what you did on the,
yeah,
on the maze.
I've been, because this year's been a whirlwind, because I've just got to do really cool stuff outside of video games. You know, I got to present an award at the BAFTAs. That was cool.
Yeah.
But people are trusting me outside of, hey, Ben, you do voices for video games or you do performances in video games, to do other things that are adjacent to it, because I feel really comfortable in the space. I feel really comfortable, like, you know, with my peers. I feel really comfortable talking to people whose work I really respect because they've inspired me, and it's from a genuine place. I have genuine questions for these people, because their work is super important to me.
That's fantastic. All right. So we are going to take a quick break just to cut to commercial. When we come back, we will talk with Ben a little bit more about Final Fantasy 16 and the upcoming Rising Tide DLC, available April 18th on PlayStation 5. We'll be right back. The Playing with Purpose podcast is brought to you by the New York Video Game Critics Circle. The New York Video Game Critics Circle is a nonprofit organization that brings comprehensive games journalism and games narrative classes direct to schools in underserved communities across New York City. Students are given unique opportunities like writing game reviews for nygamecritics.com, creating games with Twine, and conducting interviews with gamers and game industry icons, like this very episode. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to go to nygamecritics.com to learn more. And head on over to nygamecritics.com/donate to donate to this incredible cause. And now, back to the show. And welcome back to the Playing with Purpose podcast. We are here with the voice of Clive Rossfield in Final Fantasy 16 and the upcoming Rising Tide DLC available April 18th on PlayStation 5. So, Ben, we've talked a good bit about, you know, Final Fantasy and a little bit, and you had mentioned that a lot of that was luck, but how did you actually get involved with the project?
Yeah, I just turned up to one single audition last minute on a Friday, auditioned for a smaller role. Go silent. Would you audition for this? Sure. 5 minute sight read. And then I got the part the next week. It's just such a small moment that has really changed my life. And I actually can't believe how momentous it is as a turning point. But I do really want to give a shout out to Morgan Rushton, who's the man I would probably credit with this and credit with my, I'll thank him for the rest of my career, really, is the man who said, I think Ben could, this random kid who's walked into audition, think could have a go at Clive. And obviously I was solving a problem for them because they needed a person to play the role. But the fact that he saw me and went, let's give Ben the lines, is a really, really special moment. And we've stayed friends, and he's a person who in any success that I have in my life going forward, I will share with him, because he has been a rock and an inspiration to me. And there are many other people along the way, you know, Michael Christopher Koji Fox, the biggest advocate for me when it comes to being just a part of this journey, my go-to, my touchstone with it. Like he was the person who kind of pushed for me to be involved in the way that I have been. And I've had so many people who have gone, here you go, Ben. We trust you. You're good. And again, Ollie Chance is the other person. But there's just people in my life who over the past 4 years I've created not just a professional but a personal relationship with. And they're the ones, man. They're the ones. It's a cool job. It's a cool job. They were also there when, like, stuff really hit the fan. Like, I've spoken about how my dad passed away in the making of this game, which severely had to put a lot of my life on pause. And there was never any judgment. There was always only support. There was complete understanding. I felt like I could trust them with how I was feeling, what I was going through. They were the people I spoke to the most. They've been there the whole step of the way.
I'm sure too, just with a project running that long, like it's gotta be like inevitable that you build those connections. Cause a lot of times, like, you know, for a film you're on set for a couple of months, but to be there for 4 years and doing all of that must really like build that bond a lot stronger.
I like to create personal relationships with people that I work with. And I don't mean that in a weird way, but if I'm going to be working in an intense environment with you, I need to know that if I'm going to fall, you're going to catch me, because I'll catch you. And I like to get to the, can I swear on this? No.
I'm going to say no, just because we do.
Then I will not swear on this. I don't need to swear on it. Never swear. swearing's a bad thing, except when done in a Shakespearean way, it's quite delightful.
That is true.
Absolutely. Honestly, if you want to see some Shakespearean swear words, they are, oh, chef's kiss. But I think I want to get down to the fact that we all go to the toilet. We all vomit. We all cry. We are all human individuals. And I, very, very early on in any relationship with anyone, and maybe people finding alarmingly disarming, is that's what I like to get down to and be like, we are human beings communicating on a human level. Because as soon as we can do that, the business and the professional, as long as we are professional in the work that we do, I want to have a human connection with you. I want you to feel comfortable in that presence. And so it means that our work environment is, you know, we have a contract. We are going to do the work. That comes as standard. But how can we connect as human beings?
So in building those relationships then, like, how much of a role did you then have in shaping who Clive became versus what was on the page when you kind of first stepped in the role?
Clive was always there. The story of Clive's journey, his relationship with his brother, his relationship with his mother and his father and Jill, and everything was always there. I was there from when he changed over the period of time. How he got to that journey changed, and I think I was a part of that. I didn't write the character, so I can't say how it changed really, but I felt like I had a responsibility to define certain scenes. There's certain scenes that I see go around on the internet all the time that people really like. And I'm really proud because those are the ones where I think I've had the most say in how they turned out. Because I had a lot of clean air in front of me. I didn't have to go to anyone else's performance. It was, Ben, what do you want to do with this scene? So maybe I had quite a big hand in it, but, I also do want to shout out that there are so many other actors who are Clive, you know, like I got to put my flag in the sand and say, this is how I would do it. But there are other, you know, there are five other versions of it. So they have that as well. You know, they got to listen to what I did and take what I did and make it their own in their own language. But as far as I was concerned, for the English language and for the performance of mine, huge, huge amounts. Yeah. There's a scene where Clive confronts his mother for the first time that I'm so proud of. Mm-hmm. People seem to really like it. And I like it because it was a choice that we made in the room, which was what would happen if Clive walked in and he saw your mother for the first time and you regress. It's where he starts off really low and then the anger, it gets more and more and more until he just ends up screaming at his mother like a child.
Yeah, his voice kind of like breaks.
It breaks, yeah, yeah. It breaks because what happens when you revert to being a child again, you can't control it, and there's just something quite different about it. And it's not a perfect read. There's something quite kind of cracked and broken about it, and I really like it. And that was the sort of stuff that we were looking for. The crying and the screaming and was really fun, but also those really tender, intense moments. Yeah, lots of them. I listened, like, oh, there's some cool stuff in Final Fantasy. I'm excited for more people to discover it, you know, when it comes to PC. And I've seen some people replaying it, some people playing it for the first time in anticipation of the DLC coming out. And it's just nice that people are revisiting it and revisiting the character. Obviously, I was treated to being, you know, the lead character in the game. I was given a lot of opportunity. So I, you know, I'm not saying it was all my performance, but because what people do credit for this game is how incredible the cast is in general. Yeah. Like having Ralph Ineson as a partner in crime is one of the coolest things ever. You know, Guillermo del Toro came out the other day and went, Ralph Ineson's a good actor, isn't he? I went, yeah, Guillermo knows. This is a man who has worked with some of the finest film and TV film directors of all time. And they rate him highly. He's that good. Where kind of auteurs of the industry go, Ralph's it. And Susanna Fielding as Jill, I think she brings this incredible, incredible, like, humble humanity to Jill. And the same with Christopher York as Gav and Stuart Clark as Dion and Nina Indis as Benedicta. These are like, and Jonathan Case as Joshua. Like, there are so many, I could list them. They are absolutely magnificent in what they do. And each person was just, I'd turn up on set or in the booth, and I'd hear their performances and go, right, I need to up my game. I need to lift it up because I need to get to where they are. I need to be as good as they are, which is really cool.
Were you ever like in the room together recording, or it's all done separate?
Yeah, we were in the room right at the beginning. It was partner based. I'd have a revolving door of people come in. A lot of the stuff that Ralph and I did for Clive and Sid is kept from those sessions. Some, you know, sometimes you have to shift them around, but I remember being in the room a lot with Clive and Sid, and all the good back and forth happened because of us being in the room, which was really fun playing off each other. The same with Jill, actually. There's a really beautiful scene where Clive and Jill are in a barn together, and Clive is he's talking about discovering the truth about what happened, and Jill shares her trauma with Clive, and that was us in the room together. And I remember both of us looking at each other afterwards, and we both went, God, you're really good at acting. which is really, it's a lovely thing to have. And I think my relationship with the actors is closer because we were there together, and it felt like it was a real group effort.
I'm glad you brought that up because it brought me to another question that my friend had, who's a big fan of the game. And he was just ranting to me one day about like, oh, Final Fantasy, it's just like the game of the time. And I'm like, just like nodding along and agreeing with him, even though I'm currently like obsessed with Baldur's Gate. I haven't touched anything since. Mm. But the relationship between Clive and Cid, he wanted to know, like, and this is his quote, if like the banter was off the cuff or scripted. And just hearing you explain, like, yeah, you know, sometimes there were moments where we just kept that in. Like, mm-hmm. what was that like? Just having moments where it was like, this is great. This is, put that in. That's it.
Well, I have this thing where it's like, when it's good, you just go, put it in the game. Put it in the game. Because you have an idea of what you want it to sound like. There's what you want it to sound like and then what ends up sounding like. And sometimes it's significantly better and sometimes it's just not as good and you just kind of struggle to get there. But when you're in the room with someone, when you're having a genuinely human connection, it's very easy to get where you want to go. And sometimes it goes to places that you never thought it would because acting is reacting. You know, you have to, you play off that person's energy. And I can't tell you how, as a kid who loves improv and kind of cut their teeth on improvisation, that is one of the truest things of kind of what you imagine something. And this is, again, I would say this to students, if students are listening to this, it's cool discussing the idea of the text. Plays are meant to be read out loud. Text is meant to be read out loud. It is meant to be physicalized. You can analyze it to the cows come home. If that's what you want to do, do it. But the act of doing is the most important thing, because how it sounds in your head and how it comes out are two very, very different things. And then how it comes out in reaction to how someone else gives it to you, because you might discover that the way that you thought you were going to do the line doesn't work anymore because someone else says the line before you differently. And you've got to be alive to that. You just have to be alive to the possibility that what you had in your head might not be the best version of that line. And you know, actors on stage, they learn that every night. They'll be doing a show for months and they'll go, I finally discovered how to say that line correctly because of something magical that happens. And that only happens with genuine human relationships. That's why I think AI is the worst. Sorry, had to get that in. Little push.
But it's all good. It's like, if in the case someone messes up their line, how do you build off of that? Like, how do you recover? How does the show keep going on? Mm-hmm. That is so wise. Acting is reacting. I love that.
Yeah. Like, and
no, sorry. Go ahead.
Please, Ryan, go on. I have nothing.
No, my question was, like, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, 16 is the first Final Fantasy that, or maybe 15 was as well, that it wasn't localized, right? That it's like
16,
your acting,
is, 16 is the first one.
It is, yeah. The first.
Yeah. So,
but then like that allows you then to like do what you're talking about, right? Like I remember like Final Fantasy X is my favorite video game, like period. But there are so many awkward moments because like, you know, Tidus is saying something really emotional, but he has to say it really, really quick to catch those lip flaps. Whereas, you know, what you guys were able to do is actually do that performance and it's really built around that then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's that. And I think one of the reasons why people have really picked up on the performances, I think the writing of some of those characters, the character writing in Final Fantasy 16 is very, very strong. I think that's really good. And obviously Clive and Cid benefited hugely from that kind of character writing. And also it benefited from the fact that we had the time to play. They gave us time and room to play and the constraints weren't there. It wasn't someone else's performance. This is why I give credit to the other people who voiced Clive, because I didn't have to do that. I wasn't given those restraints. I was just told, Ben, do you want to go and do some acting? Not, do you want to go and act to someone else's performance? And again, why I give a load of credit to the remake cast of, you know, 7, they are absolutely astonishing, all of them. And I've met most of them and know a lot of them personally. The work that they do is remarkable, considering the constraints that they have to work under and the humanity that they bring those characters is incredible. And, you know, ultimately the process is completely different, but all of us have to end up, whether it's a dub, whether it's a, you know, it doesn't matter. We have to make people feel for it. And I commend everyone who gets to that point where it affects someone emotionally. Games are incredible. Performances are incredibly new to video games. I think a lot of people still see it as a, I don't care as long as it plays well. But I think there is something there. There's, you know, when the games that really hit us, it's because we fall in love with the characters. And we fall in love with the characters because we fall in love with the way that those performers and those artists interpreted those characters for us and kind of like lent into the world. You know, you wouldn't have the Last of Us. You know, come on. That's characters. That's characters. I hope that people seem to have resonated with Clive and his journey. And I hope that I've had at least some say in that, you know, in how people have reacted to him, because I feel very close to him and his journey.
As far as like the acting itself goes, like there's obviously like the big monumental parts with, you know, insane cursing and crying and all of that. But then there's also just the little parts, right? Where it's you know, stepping down from a short ledge or you're hopping off. And like, how do those kinds of performances like differ? Like, how do you prepare for that?
You don't prepare for them.
Yeah.
You don't prepare for them. You have to consider your body. That's why I said theater training. Be aware of your body. How does your body react to swinging a sword? How does your body react to jumping down a ledge of 5 feet? How does your body react to all of those things? Feel it and understand it, and it makes the job so much easier. You just have to physically be aware of your body. You discover it's play. It's play. It's silly. As long as we recognize that this is a silly job that we do and don't take yourself too seriously and allow yourself to make mistakes. No one's expecting you to be perfect, you know? You just have to be brave enough to offer. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. We're all going to get there. And if you're a good enough environment with people you respect, then you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
As far as to like, I'm just thinking about like other like lines that like come up and end up being like really repetitive within games. Like I have certain, you know, things embedded in my brain from just games that if you're in a fight sequence, this, that, like, for Final Fantasy 16, it's Sikkim Torgal.
Sikkim Torgal.
I think I've heard 800,000 times and will never leave my brain. Mm-hmm. But like, I guess maybe this is more on the writing side, but how do you approach that differently, knowing it's something that's going to come up and be repeated? Or
no, I did not expect them. I expected us to record more lines and they didn't. So that happens a lot. Too slow. A lot of people hear that a lot as well. You know, I was watching someone play the end of the game the other day and, you know, Clive's doing his big bag thing and he's really emotional. He's like, too slow. I'm like, okay. All right. Calm down. You can't, you just got to give them. We have, the effort bucket. Where you just throw a load of noises in, you know, efforts and sounds and stuff. And now that I have more experience, I would always advocate for more noises. It's hard, especially when you have catchphrases. Yeah, too slow and Sikkim Torgal. I think I've signed many, many video games of Final Fantasy 16 with Sikkim Torgal.
That's great.
People love that line.
So, for the DLC, Echoes of the Fallen is already out and Rising Tide is coming April 18th.
Yes.
As far as the DLC goes, was that like planned and recorded during your initial run?
No.
Or you went back like after the success of the launch?
Weird, isn't it? Well, you think you're dumb. The game was done. And, you know, there are always stories to tell. There are always parts of the world, but I think that this is what they wanted to tell. This is the extra bit of story. Mysidia is where we're going. It's cool. It's weird. It's weird because after a game comes out and people tell you that you're good in a game and then they go, come back and do it again. You're like, oh, but what if I wasn't actually that good? What if I fluked it? And so the worry was really there. but it was really, it was kind of cool knowing that this game has a life beyond what I thought it did. You know, people are getting excited about it again. And I'm really, I think the story is really neat. I think 16 above all else has been a character study. I think there's a story, but it's really about, it's the characters that people fall in love with. And I think there's more to Clive's character that we see through that. And it's always his relationships with the icons and how he feels about relationships with dominance. And without giving anything away, his relationship with this dominant is different to anything that you have seen in the game. And it's a really exciting exploration of the idea of icons and dominance. And it's really neat. And it feels different, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I think that was like, for me, the two things that I was obsessed with on 16 is, one, I love a brother story. Like, my brother and I are really close, and like, that's a thing I'm really excited for. The DLC is like getting to see more of Joshua and like knowing that that is available to it. But mm-hmm. like, being a big fan of Final Fantasy X, like the Aeons were like everything. But when you were like auditioning for it and getting the process, did you know that you were like essentially going to be Ifrit? Like, was that part of your knowledge going into that?
Going into the game, it was. Auditioning, I didn't know, because I didn't know what I was auditioning for. But when they gave me the part, they went, "This is what you are." And I went, "That's cool." That's what gave it away, actually, when on the character sheet it had Ifrit in the background.
And then
SIDS on the thing and crystals. And I went, "This is Final Fantasy, isn't it?" They went, "Yeah," like, "That's mad."
Oh, you didn't even know it was Final Fantasy?
No.
Oh, that's wild.
It's wild, yeah. I would have freaked out.
Because knowing, like, you're obviously a huge fan of 8, and, like, that game starts with, like, you fight and essentially capture Ifrit.
Yes. Yes.
That's awesome.
The symmetry is not lost on me. Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy 8, Final Fantasy 16, yeah, I'm fully, fully aware of it. It's great. What a cool job. I feel like I've got a silly, silly life, Ryan. I feel very lucky to be here. As I probably said a million times, I didn't know how to prepare for it. I didn't know what to think. I screamed into a pillow and then couldn't tell anyone for 4 years. Even after my voice was all over the first trailer and not the second trailer, but I just couldn't say anything. And I was a child at Christmas when at the Game Awards we announced afterwards they announced the cast. I knew that they were going to show the Revenge trailer as the last thing at the Game Awards in 2022. I waited all night and I was like, oh my God, maybe I can talk about it. And it wasn't until the morning when they released the cast. I went, I'm Clive. I can talk about it now, everyone. It was neat. It's pretty neat.
So is the plan now to like focus on doing more voice acting for games, or are you open to just kind of whatever opportunities are out in the ether?
I'm open to anything, but I love being here. I love this. I love the culture. I love the people. I love the creatives. I'm certainly not like dipping my feet in and being like, "Hey guys, now that one game I did, bye." Industry has so much to offer and has so much to offer performers, and I feel like it's still very adolescent in recognizing its relationship with performers and performance. And I can't wait to be hopefully a part of that industry going forward about how we can shape our relationship with performers. And I really want to see where we can go. You know, I think there's so much more to explore. I'm here for it. You know, I'm here for lots of opportunities. I've had a very, very diverse career when it comes to performing, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. But certainly I would be a fool to ignore the opportunities that have been coming my way as a result of showing an eagerness to learn in this industry. I'm not coming into it being like, "I know what I'm talking about." Like, I don't, but like, I'll throw myself in, let me have a go. You know, I'm the kind of guy that like, "Who wants to go first?" I'm like, "I will. I'll make the fool out of myself. It's fine." And I think people have really responded to that. And I'm not an expert. I'm just the idiot who doesn't mind making the first mistake, you know?
That reminds me, in 2015, you did an interview for Bad Cantina, and they quoted you saying, "When you're a young actor, you can't choose. I can't wait till I'm at a point of my career where I can choose what I want to do." Do you think since 2015 you've gotten there?
I don't think I'm that successful. I would say this: the past couple of months have been wild with the people that I've got to talk to, the types of conversations that I've been having, how creatively fulfilled I feel by those conversations. That might sound really cryptic, but I've felt like I'm being consulted in a creative way by people who I respect, and I'm looking forward to seeing when or if any of those conversations or collaborations develop into anything. But I mean, the fact is, I'm working on Warframe 1999 right now with Rebecca Ford and the Digital Extremes team, and they got me on really, really early in this process, and they have been incredibly collaborative with me and this character that I play in that game. And it's neat. It's really, really cool. And that's one of many things that I'm getting to do now, because I've shown that I'm interested in the process. So yeah, I don't know. Not yet. I can't choose. I still have to audition for things. I'm not like, hey, give me the role. I'd love to play that. But I can't wait. I can't wait till I'm at that point where I get to seize control of my own destiny and make stuff on my own terms.
Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. Final Fantasy 16 Rising Tide DLC is coming April 18th on PlayStation 5. Ben, if people are looking to find you, where can they find you?
You can find me being an idiot on the internet at @the_Ben_Star. Also, I'm a member of, if you like D&D, I'm a member of a group called Natural Six. Our first episode went out like the 3rd of April. It's on YouTube and you can listen to it on podcast services. And we've got our second episode coming. By the time you listen to this, it'll be out. It's neat. We're cool. They're 3-hour episodes and a whole homebrewed world with some incredible performers and other people you might recognize from video games and beyond. That's find me there pretending to be other people.
That's awesome. All right. Well, this has been the Playing with Purpose podcast with our amazing guest, Ben Starr. Be sure to follow NYVGCC on Twitter and Instagram for any and all updates. And do not forget to like, share, and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening. And of course, if you want to support the work that we are doing, you can make a donation at nygamecritics.com/donate. But until next time, I've been Ryan O'Callaghan with our wonderful co-host, Jade Ntien. Have a great day.